Welcome to Pathway to Priesthood, a limited audio series from the Jesuit Conference of Canada and the United States. I'm Eric Clayton, and in these conversations, I talk with Jesuits who are in the final days of preparing for ordination to the priesthood. We reflect back on their vocation stories and experiences of Jesuit formation, and we wrestle with some of the biggest questions surrounding priestly ordination today. On this episode, we're asking a basic question: why even consider religious life? And what actually is it? To reflect on these questions and more, we have two Jesuits, Michael Moore and Brooke Stacy. Michael was born and raised in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He has a background in teaching and has spent the last couple of years of his formation studying at the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome. Brooke grew up in Toronto, Ontario. Though his undergraduate studies were in geology, he has more recently completed a master's degree in psycho-spiritual studies. Both men have had the opportunity to live in a variety of places throughout their formation, and they both come at this question of religious life from very different perspectives. But at the end of the day, they both have found great consolation as members of the Society of Jesus. As you listen to their stories and reflections, I invite you to consider whether you or someone you know might be interested in discerning a call to Jesuit life. If so, head over to beajesuit.org. And now, here's Michael Moore and Brooke Stacy. Michael, Brooke, welcome to you both to our podcast today. How's it going?
It's going very well.
It's going well.
Great to be here.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, you guys are well on your way on the pathway to priesthood. But I'm wondering if for just to begin our conversation, if each of you could just give us a little kind of like the elevator pitch for what was your vocation story? You know, pretend there's maybe like four floors in the elevator. And just set the stage. So Michael, maybe you can go first. Kind of what, give us the synopsis of your vocation story.
Right. Well, I was teaching in Mississippi at a small Catholic school there. And I just realized that I had trained all this time to be a teacher. And these students were, through their questions and witness, they were pulling out of me this desire to be more, to do more. And I started thinking about the priesthood. But then the question was kind of, what does that look like for someone like me who wants to also be a teacher, or who at least found that education was such an important part? Long story short, eventually someone recommended I look at the Society of Jesus, and that started a kind of a two or three-year process of discernment. I met a lot of great guys, and I entered the Jesuit New Orleans province at the time in 2013. And then I had some great experiences in the novitiate that led me to keep saying yes, took my vows in 2015, and continued on with studies. Part of my vocation story, I think, depends a lot on the Jesuits have given me a great opportunity to go in some really great directions all around the world. And that formation through experience and through study has been so fundamental to kind of bringing me to this threshold of ordination.
Nice. Awesome. I'm curious, what when you say like you're invited to look at the society, was there a book or a movie or an author or something particular that you was your kind of entry point for that kind of, you know, quote unquote look that then brought you deeper into this vocation?
The Society of Jesus ran, you know, the school, our rival high school in Louisiana down in New Orleans. And so the idea of me being a Jesuit felt like almost a betrayal of my own high school. So I had kept them at arm's length in that sense. Again, that's not very serious. But when I started getting serious about religious life, a colleague of mine who was a Irish Christian brother, this order runs Iona College up in New York, and he was a graduate of Fordham, and he had worked with Jesuit novices when he himself was in formation. He's the one who said, Michael, between your love of education and your desire to be a teacher, and from what I know about the Society of Jesus, having worked alongside them, I think you really need to give them a good look. Their charism will really resonate with you. And so that personal testimony by someone who knew me and was from a different religious order gave me a lot of reason to keep looking. And so I got a copy of The Jesuit Guide to Almost Everything, which a lot of people were reading at the time. And I wonder if they still are. I think it was a really great book by James Martin to give a good sense of what the Society of Jesus is about today and what it has been about throughout its history.
Yeah. Awesome. Brooke, how about you?
So I am from Toronto, Ontario in Canada. I went to a Catholic private high school and grade school. So I guess my faith was in the culture, not coming from a very practicing religious family, however. And then I went off to university to study engineering. And, you know, I was just kind of a young, wayward youth, and I was partying a lot and didn't do well in my studies and all these things. And then eventually had a kind of coming to God moment, I suppose, where a friend of mine, he actually invited me to come to church with him. One day, I hadn't been in about 10 years. And I went with him, and then I met a youth group that was part of the chaplaincy at the university. And so one of the missionaries there, he just kept inviting me to do a Bible study and to give me my first rosary, my first Bible. And I started getting involved in this community. So there were sort of these two communities that I was experiencing. Let's say my kind of wild university party life, and then this, you know, seemingly more wholesome Catholic community that I did like, and I was attracted to spending more and more time with them. And there was a young priest in that group, and I became friends with him. We would play squash together. We'd go on hikes together. He was part of another religious order, the Companions of the Cross. And I went to a conference with this Catholic organization at Christmas. And during that conference, I actually went to one of the workshops. It was called Discernment of Spirits. I didn't even know what that was. And in the workshop, turned out to be the vocation director of the Jesuits. And he gave this really fascinating talk about the interior life and discernment, consolation, desolation. And just a thought just popped into my mind at that time. Wow, if I could be any priest, I'd want to be a Jesuit because they're the best. But then I also simultaneously thought, but they're too smart and, you know, they contact you, you can't contact them. So I didn't really even consider them. But this desire to be a priest actually started then. And then when I went back to school and was finishing my degree, stayed with me for a couple, 3 years, that desire. I didn't really tell anyone. And then eventually a priest in confession said, well, you should try to find a spiritual director. So I went to the church that was in the cathedral in Halifax, Nova Scotia, where I was doing my studies. And I asked this nun that I knew, Sister Jovita, and she said, yeah, come in on Friday and I'll introduce you to a spiritual director. And it turned out to be a Jesuit. And so I began with him, and he got me to read the autobiography of St. Ignatius, which I also found really deep, really profound, because it talks about that moment where Ignatius realized the different movements in him and how to discern and follow which ones. And I remember I was just started telling everybody about this book and how I was so inspired by this crazy saint and also intimidated by him, because if you read the autobiography, he sounds very intense. I don't know if I would ever like to meet him. maybe now I have a more nuanced view of him. And then, so I actually finished my degree when I was 23, and then I joined the novitiate right after. And so 23, now I'm 33. I just got ordained a deacon, did my theology in Paris, got ordained there. And then I came back to Toronto where I am now. I'm doing a degree in psychotherapy and looking forward to ordination in June. And so it's been a crazy journey with ups and downs and joys and struggles and learning and growing. But I feel extremely privileged and blessed to be where I am today.
That's beautiful. I'm really struck by the fact that both of you have in your vocation story a member of a different religious order, or even a couple, you know, different folks pointing you towards the Jesuits, not pointing you towards their own orders, but pointing you towards the Jesuits, which I think in some ways speaks to the uniqueness of charisms, right, in religious orders. So I'm wondering if you could each reflect a little bit on, like, how do you understand religious life? Like, what does it mean to be in religious life versus like another kind of life? Like, you know, I consider myself to be religious at times, but I am married, but definitely not in religious life. So what Just for listeners, what's the definition? And how do you see, why did you choose religious life as a way to best respond to kind of God's own workings in your life? So Brooke, maybe you can start us off on this one.
Yeah, sure. So to define religious life in one sentence might be pretty difficult, but I would say, sure, the core of it is the vows. So we take three vows: poverty, chastity, and obedience. Those vows are to the Society of Jesus. And so we vow to remain faithful to our vows and to remain faithful to stay in the society and spend our whole lives in it. So there's a commitment, I think, at its core. Then there's the lifestyle that you're in because of that commitment, which is unique for sure. There's a lifestyle of community, living with brothers, sharing meals, praying together. Ignatius said that we're not monks, we're living in the world. But I've always felt that there's sort of a monastic attraction. I remember a Jesuit said to me that in the heart of every Jesuit is a monk, that there's a sort of desire for that form of contemplation, some form of solitude, an attraction to prayer, an attraction to spending time with the Lord. So those are some of the things that I would say. On a personal note, I feel like I was personally attracted to religious life. I think number one, because of community. And I did like that sense of community and brotherhood, but also oddly enough, celibacy. That for me, although celibacy was never necessarily something easy, there was something, it might sound odd, but even attractive about celibacy. There was something that I could actually offer all of myself to God, and that in living in this way, that I could actually experience a deep union with God in my prayer and in my life. So now I don't know if that's true for everyone, but I don't see celibacy and that vow as just sort of something I put up with in the vocation. I also see it as part of the vocation and the call.
How do you, thinking about celibacy, but also the other vows you take, how for you personally, does that commitment help you to best contribute, your own unique skills and gifts to the world, do you think? How is God kind of pulling you out of you through those vows?
So this is the interesting thing. I think that in life, we're faced with so many decisions, and people are often confused which decisions to make and which paths to follow. And I think one of the consequences is we get paralysis and we don't make any commitments. We don't make any decisions. And I find that the more that I've committed into this particular life, sure, I've used discernment and consolation and desolation to give me clarity that this was the right path to choose. But what I've noticed is that the more I actually commit to it, it's really like that parable of the talents, where the guy was given 10 talents and he multiplied it. And then there was a guy with 5, multiplied it. Guy with 1 who hid it. I found in my life, whenever I was hesitant or I was fearful, like that guy who hid his talent, I just wasn't really fruitful. And unfortunately, and I find that the more that God gives me the grace to trust in his love so that I can commit more deeply to this, especially now, 10 years in formation, I'm starting to really experience the fruits of it. And how God is using all of my talents, all of who I am, for the mission, for people. And that's playing out practically, in my apostolic life. I'm preaching at a parish, in my studies, and I'm doing counseling right now. I also did, I taught in Regency in a high school. And that's just like Michael, that's where I want to be actually, is a high school and be teaching. So I just got accepted to Teachers College. So in September, I'll be starting that program. And yeah, just God's using all my talents now. So I'm experienced, and you get a lot of joy and meaning from that, so.
Beautiful. Michael, how about you? How do you kind of come at the idea of religious life and the vows? How do those vows really pull you out of you in a really holy sense?
Yeah, that distinction is one I want to pick up on. I remember when I first joined the first day of the Jesuit novitiate, there was a priest from Portugal visiting our novitiate, and he asked me, did you join the Jesuits to be a Jesuit or to be a priest? And I found it's a curious question, but honestly, without hesitation, I said to be a Jesuit. And that's framed a lot of my understanding of formation, my own formation particularly. When I look back, I went to all-boys Catholic high school, called Catholic High School in Baton Rouge, run by the Brothers of the Sacred Heart. And this religious order and these men who had given their lives to something beyond themselves was so attractive to me that this there was a heroic virtue being expressed in their conviction and their dedication to those who were in their charge. And, you know, just like is the case with so many religious orders in the apostolates, there are not a lot of guys running around, but it wasn't about numbers. It was kind of that what each of these men represented attracted me to go deeper. So I guess what I want to say with that is religious life is a way of life. It's a way of living. And as I've learned in the Society of Jesus, our charism is really born out of this person of St. Ignatius of Loyola, who, with his kind of closest friends, Peter Faber and Francis Xavier, something emerged that really was expressed, I think, fundamentally in Ignatius as the founder, that has shaped the imaginations of everyone after. And I think what I want to say then is that it's the charism of following a way of life. And the way of living that Ignatius experienced, because that's where his charism, I would say, first developed, that this gift from God developed out of his willingness to throw himself into life and to listen to how life and God spoke back to him. And then our response is, it needs to be one of generosity and conviction. I wanted that life. I wanted something like that. And I felt that the more I reflected, the more I wanted to not just serve, to be of use, but to kind of give my whole self, kind of what Brooke was saying, just this, the vows are a self-giving. I found, I'll pick up with chastity, because I think that's just such one people are always interested in. But for me, chastity is a liberation. It's a freedom, and I never would have thought that. I thought it would have been the opposite. It's so counterintuitive to the culture and society's notion of liberty. But really, what we're looking for, what I'm looking for, is how do I love best in this world, and the vows. Particularly the vow of chastity, is an offering of self to God, who then makes that offering available to the world. And that has manifested itself through obedience, through poverty, through chastity, as I said. These vows have manifested in this self-giving, first to God, who then, through kind of the wisdom of the order and the structures, places us in some incredible contexts where we can learn how to love better and realize that God first loved us. So it's that relationship, I think, with God and then with his people and then how I can love.
Yeah, I like what you say a lot about, you know, how can I love best in the world? I think that's a question for every person, right? It doesn't matter. That's the question of vocation.
Exactly.
I also think it's really helpful as you both have been talking about kind of charism, because I think charism is essential to religious life and a religious order. And again, it might not be something that folks listening think about frequently or necessarily differentiate among different religious orders. So maybe both of you briefly, just what is the charism that is attracting you in the Society of Jesus? How are you thinking about it? How do you explain it to others? And what about it attracts you? Michael, maybe you can kick that one off.
There was a great Jesuit historian, God rest his soul, Father John Padberg. And I met him as a novice, and he told me, Michael, what makes the Jesuits unique in the story of religious life is that Ignatius saw that we help our souls by helping other souls. And it's that contemplative in action. That's the phrase that a lot of people use. Brooke gestured at it earlier, even. So I wonder if he would share my thought on this idea of, that there's an interior desire to be close to God that reveals itself in the service to others, that this contemplative inaction, that monk that lives within us. I wonder if that's what Brooke was saying when he. So I like this idea. What John Padberg was saying to me was that, and there's a famous story that kind of illustrates this. Jerome Nadal was a novice during the time of Ignatius, and he was told by Ignatius to go work in a hospital. And Jerome Nadal was like, well, look, I'm not quite ready to help. I need to work on myself first. I need to kind of, you know, focus on these prayers and get better. And Ignatius just said, you will go to the hospital and with the people, you will learn how God is trying to help you. And of course, they use the words saving souls, helping souls. All these words, I think, like the way I would interpret it today is that, yes, we're talking about salvation. Yes, we're talking about helping souls. We're talking about how do we be with God? How do we love God? And this source of love draws all of us in different ways. And so for me, the charism of service is what really attracts me. And then what I learned in this desire to be useful in the world, to be disponible to serving God's people, is that actually I need help. I need to be loved, and that there's a reciprocity that we find in a relationship with Jesus Christ, who came to be with us, that we find out what it really means to be collaborating in God's vineyard. So I think this idea of service and the idea of helping souls and the reciprocity of helping souls, and that others help me learn how to love God. There's a beautiful vision there for the Christian church.
Yeah, I love it. Well said. Brooke, how about you? What do you think?
Yeah, what is the Jesuit charism? I think for sure Michael hits the nail on the head with the contemplative inaction. We're definitely in the world. We try to discern God's will through our experiences, you know, the experiences in ourselves and those that we encounter in others. And that mystery, it's really mysterious how that works. So I would definitely affirm that. On another angle, I would say sometimes it's hard to say exactly what the Jesuit charism is, but you know it when you see it. It's kind of like when I meet a Jesuit, I'm like, oh yeah, that guy's really, he's got it. And then sometimes I don't know even what it is that that guy has when I meet them. So that's something that's always interested me. One other thing, though, I would think is from what I've experienced in formation and what I've received from this life is definitely teaching me how to pray and how to communicate with God. So doing the spiritual exercises and just even, yeah, the insights of Ignatius with discernment and everything, that maybe one of the things I'm most grateful for is that my formation has actually shown me how to have a relationship with Jesus and to live that in my day-to-day life. And there's nothing more precious than that. So I'm really grateful. And I think the Jesuits, I think there is a uniqueness to our way of even considering and conceiving prayer and the form of prayer that we use often with our imagination. So yeah, that's some things.
Yeah. Some of the ways you describe it, I'm like, oh, like I think I do some of those things too. Again, not a Jesuit, definitely married, but also I think part of the context in which you guys are formed and in which you, the community, you've both mentioned community as being part of that. And I think that is also, just from my observation of working, collaborating with Jesuits, that is a key part of it all.
Absolutely.
I think a big question folks always wonder, right, is, you know, many people in their kind of everyday lives of being Catholic, you know, the priests they bump into are diocesan priests, right? You know, the pastor at the local parish. So that's certainly one way of being a priest. Michael, you've already said kind of like the distinction between a Jesuit and a priest, although a Jesuit can certainly be a priest and a brother or a brother. So for you, for each of you personally, in your own kind of discernment, how did you end up on this path to religious life as opposed to diocesan life? And then why ultimately, I think you've both already hit on this a little bit, but maybe if there's any more to say on why the Jesuits as opposed to any of the religious orders that, you know, along the way that you clearly bumped into. Brooke, you want to start this one off?
So yeah, in my university years, when I was getting into my faith and getting involved with that youth group, I went to church, you know, on Sundays, and the priest was a diocesan priest. And that entire time of 3 or 4 years in university, I honestly never even considered the diocesan priesthood. Like, I never really, it's not that I didn't think it was possible or an option. I just had a clear sense that it wasn't the style of religious life or priesthood that I wanted to live out. And I think it was a big part. It was the community. Because I think I was looking for a sense of belonging. I wanted to belong to something. And for me, the sense of a brotherhood or a religious order, there was, and the community and the experiences that I had had visiting different religious communities was why I was attracted more to that. Now, I did meet other religious orders. So I mentioned one. They're not exactly a religious order. They're like a, I forget what you call it, but it's like it's a form of diocesan brotherhood or something. The Companions of the Cross. But I also went to a Franciscan parish, and I would, you know, have espresso with these Italian Franciscans after Saturday Mass. And I think I had insights into what it was like to live community life. So I think those were giving me images. So then the question is why I chose the Jesuits in the end over them. In a way, part of that was somewhat circumstantial, just because I met a spiritual director who was a Jesuit. But this wasn't the first time I met the Jesuit at the conference. I actually met a Jesuit novice who was on his pilgrimage at that same church, who then gave me all this wisdom, and I had this great relationship with him. And then I finally, seeking a spiritual director, was led to a Jesuit again. So just life, God just kept funneling me towards the Jesuits. And I remember when I started learning about Ignatian spirituality and being formed in that way of prayer and reading the autobiography of St. Ignatius, these were deep, rich experiences. And I was realizing the rich history of the Jesuits as well. And that was something attractive. But I do remember it was a difficult discernment for me to look at these two goods and say, do I join the Jesuits or do I join the Companions of the Cross? And I remember it was painful to let go, actually, of the idea of the Companions of the Cross. I knew a lot of them. I was good friends with them. But I guess I trusted the discernment and the movements I was experiencing of consolation, desolation, especially when I went to the Come and See to visit the novitiate with the Jesuits. I was filled with joy, hope, excitement about the whole formation process. And so in the end, I just chose to go with the Jesuits. And living in it now, I'm so grateful that was the one I chose. I don't know if I would have worked out in any other order. I think this is the only one for me, to be honest.
Nice. I like that. You know, you're using discernment even before you got into the game. Yeah. And I also think I want to highlight just something from your story that you said, like, in some ways it was circumstantial, like thinking people kind of trip into the Jesuits. And I don't think that's uncommon just from folks I talk to in religious life and in all sorts of different orders. And I think, again, that's God right at work, you know, inviting us deeper. And I think that's really helpful to hear. Michael, how about you?
I mentioned the Brothers of the Sacred Heart. And again, I had done, as a high school student, a number of retreats with them and visits with them. And I really liked the simplicity, the dedication to a ministry of high school, the camaraderie that I found around the dinner table, in the chapel, at the evening prayers. Religious life, in my conception of a vocation as an option, a religious vocation as an option, that really was it. But then after college in Mississippi, I started teaching in a high school. And I mean, this is a mission territory in the Catholic Church. I mean, there were people there that still don't think Catholics were Christian. And I just remember having conversations, you know, always very amicable about, you know, what we believe. And with my students who were curious, who were sharing what they had heard at their churches. And again, these students were pulling out of me a desire to to serve the church and to be available in kind of a whole way. So it got me thinking, what if I join the diocese of Jackson, Mississippi, which is pretty much 2/3 of the whole state. So I was like, what if I join this diocese and serve as a priest here? So I went on a come and see retreat there. And you know, I don't mind telling this story, but I just want to be clear. I love the diocese, and it's an important ministry. But I really understood that God calls people in a lot of different ways, and that's okay. So I just had a conversation with someone that was also on the come and see, and who knows if he became a priest or not. But I remember saying, he's like, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm a teacher, but I'm thinking maybe of being a priest. And he's like, gosh, who would ever want to be a teacher? That's why I want to become a priest. I'd rather be a priest than a teacher. And this kind of dichotomy is ridiculous, of course. But I just remember thinking, man, that is the opposite thing I needed to hear on this weekend. Another young priest had said how much he had loved his priestly vocation and kind of the independence of his life. And he lived in a rectory kind of by himself, and that he found that really empowering. And he had spent a lot of his community was found in the community of the parish. He had grown up in the city. He was serving the city. And this guy really has a connection here in this place, and that this is a part of how he sees himself and his vocation. None of this was resonating with me. So I had this panic. I was like, this is not what brought me here. I met some great people, and this desire to be a priest still was there. And so I thought, well, maybe I go back to the religious order side. But I don't mind saying this either. This is 2010. And the website game was weak. I mean, there was just, if you pulled up, you know, Googling different religious orders, you'd find some very bizarre websites, unintelligible things, link not found, photos from 15 years ago. I think we all religious orders and diocesan life has changed that. If you haven't, my recommendation is do that. Make update your media. Because I really didn't know a Jesuit personally. I didn't know a lot of members of religious orders, but I was interested. And so to conclude that point, I just wanted to say, again, that fellow religious order, Irish Christian brother, fellow English teacher, he told me, he saw in me something that I really was just touching the surface on, and he helped me understand maybe how God was calling me. And he was right. Ultimately, what attracted me eventually after 2 years of discernment to the Jesuits, I would say three things. The first was the community dimension. I was meeting a lot of guys like me in the sense that kind of what Brooke said, you kind of know it when you see it, that similar experiences, similar desires of having a life around the person of Jesus and the life of the church. To be accessible to a wide range of people. That was attractive. The variety of ministries, particularly education in the United States, was big. And finally, the Ignatian spirituality, this approach to prayer, the imagination, the discernment of spirits, trusting that the Holy Spirit can use all the powers of the soul to unite you with God. I found this fascinating. And I didn't want to just learn how to pray like the Jesuits do. I wanted to become an expert, if you will. I wanted to make it my life. And so those three things, the Ignatian spirituality, community, and ministry, those things really led me to into the Jesuit novitiate.
Yeah, it's funny I hear. So the Holy Spirit obviously has a role in calling our vocation, but also the search engine, I think, has a role in discerning our vocation, right? The SEO, which is someone who works on the communication side of the vocation promotion, is very true. It's beautiful things. And I think in both of your reflections, like the distillation of what makes a Jesuit is really. It's really beautiful, and I think really helpful. Last question, then we'll get into some rapid fire ones. But what just one joy and maybe one surprise from your time in formation as a Jesuit? One joy, one surprise. Michael.
The greatest joy is the gift of being with a wide range of people from, I mean, I guess it's people. That's my joy. I love people. I'm studying currently at the Gregorian University in Rome, and I'm with 100 people from about probably as many countries in the university. And it's just every break moment is an opportunity for a wonderful, beautiful encounter. So the joy of encountering people, to seeing the faith alive across the world, represented in the different people of their local church. That's my favorite part of Jesuit life. It's the greatest gift. And the surprise is probably related to that, would be that when you're willing to say yes, the Jesuits will use that generosity. So I've spent some amazing summers getting to know the Universal Church, sharing some of the skills that I've kind of cultivated. I've taught English. You know, English teaching is a demand, and so I've taught English in Vietnam to my brother Jesuits. This summer I was in Uganda with Jesuit Refugee Service teaching English there. Just a willingness to say yes and to experience the Universal Church and hopefully to keep expanding my mind. These have been the surprises. I never would have expected to go to any of these places, let alone to encounter the living Universal Catholic faith. It's sustained me. It's a beautiful gift, a joy and a surprise of the society.
Nice. Brooke, one joy, one surprise from formation.
So the joy, when you just say the question, like something very specific just comes to mind, an event, and that was actually my diaconal ordination. And oddly enough, I was going through quite a desolation right before it. It was, I had a lot of fears that came up, insecurities, doubts, all these things. I got through it. There was a graced moment where I experienced a deep sense of freedom. And then the moment itself was really pure, deep joy. I remember being prostrate down and just like crying. And we had this beautiful litany of the saints, which is a Congolese litany in French. And it's just so beautiful. And there's, you know, the djembe playing. And then I just, in that moment, I remember thinking of just the litany of the saints, or the community, the communion of saints, the church since the Acts of the Apostles, you know, laying on of hands. I just had this really profound sense of being part of this huge universal church for centuries back. So it's a very extreme, deep grace and joy, which is not just happiness. There was, you know, it was a deep, deep experience. The surprise has been similar, and joy as well, is similar to what Michael said, which is the international experience of meeting people. And so I would have never expected as well to have had the experiences and formation I've had to travel around the world, to spend 3 years in France studying theology. That was an incredible experience. And my community there was very international. Guys from all over, from Vietnam, from India, from Africa. And that's very rich. That is very rich to encounter these people from all over the world and have those different perspectives. So I feel extremely fortunate. And yeah, definitely, I didn't know that was a part of this, but it's been part of my journey. So it's been very grateful.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, as someone who works with the Jesuits, the global church nature of it is, I think, is just always inspiring and humbling and really, really cool. All right, guys. So now we come to the final portion of our two portions of this interview, rapid fire questions. So you each get, I will call on you. And you each get one word, maybe a sentence fragment, but not a full sentence, and certainly not more than one to answer. You understand? You good? You ready?
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Michael, favorite band?
Chicago.
Brooke.
Okay. Neil Young.
Okay. Michael, TV show. Favorite TV show. Or the one you're watching now. Either way.
Oh, gosh. Favorite TV show. It's probably The Shield.
Oh, all right. Brooke?
A little dark.
it's just the one that I'm watching now, Shogun.
Oh, nice. All right. Good, good. Michael, favorite place you've been missioned to?
Rome.
Rome. Okay. It's not to say the others are bad, just as your favorite.
Oh, it's hard to pick.
Brooke.
Belize.
Oh, nice. Michael, favorite ice cream flavor or gelato, since I know you're in Italy?
Chocolate.
Okay.
It's not boring, but it's good.
Brooke?
Chocolate.
Really?
Yeah. Nice, man.
I remember when I was several times in Spain, I've had Pitufo, which I think translates to Smurf. Which talk about a dark gelato flavor. Smurf. Anyway, last movie you watched, Michael?
Top Gun Maverick.
Okay, nice. That counts.
Excellent film.
Good. Brooke?
I saw Dune 2 last Thursday. It's amazing.
That's awesome. And for listeners, we're recording like right when Dune came out. So good for you, man. You are cutting edge. I'm excited to see that one.
I got to see that.
Yeah. Oh, jealous. Michael, favorite Jesuit saint?
It's St. Francis Xavier.
All right. Brooke?
Jean de Brébeuf.
Oh, nice. All right. Michael, a book you're currently reading that is not for class.
Oh gosh, not for class. It's an Italian novel, but I'm reading it in English, sadly, because I never got good enough to read it. It's 19th century Italian. It's The Betrothed.
Oh, all right. Brooke?
The Shack, a pretty famous book.
Oh yeah. Is this your first time through it?
Yeah, my dad's not really very religious, okay? Anyway, he finds this book all tattered. I've never even read it. I don't even know how it got there. He finds it on my shelf in my room at their house. And he reads it and he says it brought him to tears. And he's like, Brooke, you got to read this. So I've been reading it and it is beautiful.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time. I know I'm breaking my own rules here, but I know it's been a long time since I read that. But I remember being moved.
Also me, I have to say, I'm sorry. When I was with the Brothers of the Sacred Heart and in the Navajo Nation, and the brother there, when I was in high school, he gave me that book. He said, you need to read this. It had a major major impact on me as well, bro.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. How many cups of coffee do you drink a day, Michael?
Okay, this is espresso cups, because just in my life here, it's 2 in the morning and 1 after lunch.
Nice. Brooke?
Just one in the morning. Wow.
Good for you. Good. I'm on like 6. I'm drinking one right here as we talk. One word to describe being a Jesuit, Michael.
Joy.
Brooke, you can't pick joy.
That's fine. Can I pick 2 words? No, okay.
Put a hyphen. You got to put a hyphen in there.
Okay. Exciting adventure. Adventure is a good one, though. Let's say adventure.
Or adventurous. That would be the adjective, right?
Right.
Oh, sorry. All right. Last rapid-ish fire question. Michael, what are you most looking forward to about ordination?
Is this rapid fire?
Can be a full sentence. Okay. As you've been really strict so far.
No, I mean, just because for me, it's the sacrament of confession. It's the penance. I was accompanying a young person through the church, the Jesu church. This person wasn't particularly a practicing Christian or a practicing Catholic anymore, but, you know, raised Catholic. And we had about an hour and a half together in this church, just talking about the faith and the story and the different stories. And this person asked me at the end, like, you're a Jesuit, can you hear my confession? And I was like, well, I am a Jesuit, but I can't hear your confession. But I just, and I just remembered, man, what a privilege, and this act of trust that this person had. I just happened to be available to help this person. And again, it was, I think, just God does amazing things when we put ourselves out there and we're available. So what I'm looking forward to is the opportunity that when I encounter people in this way, that I can say, yes, it'd be my privilege to hear the confession. So that's what I'm most looking forward to about ordination.
Beautiful. And that's a great way of also for listeners of like thinking about Jesuit life and priestly ordination and how those things kind of interweave and you know, one feeds the other. Brooke, what are you most looking forward to?
So actually, I mean, one way to respond to this is the actual event. Like, what am I looking forward to the day of my ordination? And a big thing that comes to mind is reconnecting with old friends. So I'm going to reach out to a lot of old friends that I haven't seen, that I grew up with, that were extremely surprised by this whole choice of life for me. And because I look at this ordination as it's not really just for me, of course, it's actually for the church. And so I want them to come and be moved. I want the experience of them seeing this ordination to be moved and brought to think about God in their life. So that's my big desire for that day. Because a lot of my friends and family come from a very secular culture and aren't quite religious or practicing. So I think this is one of those great opportunities to show them something about the beauty of the church and what it means to, you know, give your life to God and the joy that comes from that. And so that's a big thing that I'm looking forward to. I'd say the other thing in terms of more of the life of being ordained, oddly enough, so I just had my 8-day retreat in preparation for ordination just a week ago. And I wake up the morning after and a guy who I haven't spoken to in years, who I went to grade school with, texts me the morning I'm leaving the retreat house. He says, "Hey, I know that you're, I heard you're getting ordained. I want to get married in August. I was wondering if you'd be able to do our wedding."
Oh, nice.
I haven't spoken to this guy in years, and out of the blue texts me, you know? So I was just like, so marrying people, I think, would be really beautiful. It'd be so fun to be part of families, you know?
Yeah. Beautiful. Brooke, Michael, thank you so much for sharing your reflections today, and congratulations on your upcoming ordinations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Pathway to Priesthood was edited and produced by me, Eric Clayton. Our theme music is by Kevin Lasky. The Jesuit Conference Communications team is Mike Jordan Lasky, Megan Leipsch, Marcus Bleach, Becky Sindelar, and me, Eric Clayton. Special thanks to Father Radmauer Howe, Vocation Director of the Jesuits U.S. West Province, for pitching this idea. If you're interested in learning more about Jesuit life or getting in touch with a Jesuit who can answer your questions, visit beajesuit.org. Now, there are three questions St. Ignatius encourages us all to pray with. What have I done for Christ? What am I doing for Christ? What ought I do for Christ? No matter what vocational path you're currently on, I share those with you so that together we can all build up God's world.